Hello, everyone, and welcome to Parkside Today. I'm John Melke. Because it's radio, I could tell you that Parkside Today traveled to New Orleans to be with our guest. You know, after all, it's radio, so how would you know? But the truth is, we're connecting with Joe Kennedy today via telephone. Joe is at his home in the Crescent City, and Joe, we're so glad you could spend a little time with us.
Well, thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be able to communicate with you about this.
Well, to give everyone a little background, Joe Kennedy, a.k.a. Big Joe Kennedy, is a native of Racine, a 2002 graduate of Walden III High School, and a 2007 graduate of UW Parkside. Big Joe lives and performs in New Orleans, including with the Dukes of Dixieland, Burgundy Burlesque at the Saint Hotel, solo piano at 21st Amendment La Louisiane, and Fritzl's Jazz Club on Bourbon Street. So, Joe, you've been playing piano since you were 8, performing in public since you were 15. How did you ever get started? When did you know that you liked playing piano?
As far back as I can remember, I've just liked playing piano. Before I got lessons, we had a neighbor that had a piano in her house, and anytime I would see her in the backyard with her dogs, I'd go ask if I could play her piano, and she'd let me do it sometimes.
And what about, tell us a little bit about, how did you get started playing in public at 15? I think maybe you were playing in some places where you shouldn't have been in there at 15.
Yeah, very true. there was a group of us at Walden that started a band. It was called Further. And Josh Sherman, who's also a Parkside alumni, was in the band on drums. And there's two other members, Willie Maryland and Miriam Brousseau.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a CD and got booked at Harborfest when we were 15 or 16. And then through Harborfest, that connected me with Gary Lekas of Gary's Music World, who invited me to the weekly blues jam at George's when I was 16.
Wow.
So my parents would sacrifice their Sunday evenings and come sit in the bar with their underage kid.
Nice parents that they were nice enough to do that.
Very much.
Yeah. So I was interested, you know, I mean, we've known each other for a while since you were a student here at Parkside back a few years ago. And when I was reading the story that we're going to be publishing on the UW Parkside website, I forgot that you have two undergraduate degrees from UW Parkside.
Yeah, that was fun.
And tell us a little bit about the process of you needed to take that before the UW system regents to get, I guess, permission to be granted 2 degrees, your BS in business management and your BA in music. And what was that process like?
It was a bit stressful when the office told me that I would actually only be getting 1 degree. I felt like I had to fight for all the hard work I've done.
So I
wrote a letter and I sent them my official transcripts, and they reviewed it and agreed to consider me a dual degree seeking student. And luckily my grades were on point and I was on the dean's list academically, and I could actually vouch for the fact that I've done all the work myself.
Right. Wow, that's interesting. I don't know that I know anyone else that has 2 undergraduate degrees, so congratulations.
Thank you. It was a bunch of work. I mean, I did every summer class and winter room class that was offered that fit in my schedule.
Right. So after you graduate from UW Parkside and you head out you've been on cruise ships, you've been a musical director for a touring musical, dueling pianos. Tell us about how things got going after Parkside.
After Parkside, I went directly to grad school at UNLV in Las Vegas.
Gee, there's a city where not much is happening.
No, not at all. It's very boring, mundane, nothing occurs there at all. So I moved out there, I think it was about 6 weeks after finishing Parkside, and started my grad school with them for jazz piano in the fall of 07, and that kicked my butt, man.
How so?
A new environment. I didn't know anybody. I had to kind of break into the scene and try and get some gigs and introduce myself to all the other music students that I was encountering.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to be an undergraduate private lesson piano teacher. So that was a very new experience, teaching people that, you know, 3 months prior I was one of them, and now I'm teaching them. So it was a learning experience all around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 2,000 miles from where I grew up and my family and my safety net.
Sure. And how much did you get a chance to play out there?
On average, I was there for 2 years, and I averaged 3 nights a week.
Oh, okay. What were some of the
My longest run was at Mandalay Bay. I think it was 13 months at Mandalay Bay, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
And that was solo piano in a lounge. And then I would do, through UNLV, they have a nice network of people that have parties or need of entertainment. So I would play private gigs in the conference rooms of the casinos as sponsored by UNLV. And then I would network in the community, and I ended up playing at some Italian restaurants and finding a little Italian booking agent, a guy from the Bronx, New York, and he helped me out.
Was it at all, I don't know if the word intimidating is the right word, but to go from kind of playing more in here in the Midwest and playing in Racine, and then being in a city like Las Vegas, where, you know, one of the entertainment, not we'll say meccas, but one of the entertainment highlights of the world, really out there.
It certainly made me have to work harder, and I'm very thankful now to have done that at the time that I did. It kind of gave me a humbled awakening to reality that there are some bad mothers out there, and some of them I've got to compete with. So
wow. Well, I got to ask you about what's it like being a band leader on a cruise ship?
It's a lot of fun. I had control of the rehearsals. I would make sure that the other guys were doing their jobs right. Make sure the other guys have their, there's a lot of things outside of the music that I had to pay attention to, like, were they dressed in the appropriate attire during the day when we weren't working?
Mm-hmm.
And when we weren't working, did they have their name tag on and off at the appropriate times? They want you to have a name tag on when you're off stage and off when you're on stage, at least when I was doing it.
Wow.
9 years ago.
Uh-huh. How'd you get involved with that particular part of your career?
I was teaching full-time in New Orleans, 6 days a week, and I wanted to play more, and I auditioned for an opening with Holland America, and they called and offered me the job as a band leader.
Wow. And so when you're on a cruise ship and you're the band leader, does it feel like you're just in a big room, or do you get the feeling that you get a chance to enjoy some of the places that you may dock at or things like that, or because you're working, maybe not so much?
Well, with my job and the bands that I was leader of, we were a jazz trio. So we didn't have extensive rehearsals with guest artists or other things, or cast member shows that we had to perform with. So we were kind of autonomous. And once we got our stuff together, we were free to go out and visit the ports and have a good time, as long as we didn't have any other obligations that day.
Right. And where was there a certain part of the, you know, certain places that the cruise ship was it like Bahamas or, you know, in the Gulf, or where did you go?
I've done, I think it's 21 or 22 of the Caribbean islands, most of Central America and Mexico and Alaska, California, Washington.
Wow, interesting. And then, so you move from band leader on a cruise ship, and then become, and I don't know that I've got the chronological order here absolutely correct, but You're a musical director for a touring musical, and how did you get involved with that?
Well, that was before the cruise ship.
Oh,
that was when I was in Las Vegas.
Okay.
There was a production from UNLV that was going to travel around Australia and play for the Fringe Festival that goes on there every year.
Mm.
Adelaide, Australia, at that time, had the second largest Fringe Festival each year.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and did, I think it was 3 weeks in Australia, maybe 2 weeks and 6 days or something, right around there.
Mm-hmm.
A good chunk of time. It was well worth it, and we had the writer of the musical was at some of the rehearsals in Las Vegas and got to critique us, and then we went and traveled and put on the show.
Mm-hmm. How does the, it sounds like from what you're doing or what you have done, that not only the music education comes into play for you, but also the business side as well. Is that correct?
Undoubtedly, yeah. It has paid off. I haven't had a direct job in the business field,
mm-hmm.
but my knowledge and experiences in the classroom have certainly paid their dividends time over for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what when you were going to school here and you're doing the business degree and completing the music degree, did you have any like idea that maybe down the road you'd be doing what you're doing today?
Well, after my first semester as a business major and music minor, when I decided to do both music and business,
mm-hmm.
I had always hoped that this is where I would be, is performing. I didn't know it was going to be in New Orleans, but I'm quite thrilled that it is.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that playing piano is going to be the major part of my life.
Yeah. And you're in maybe the arguably one of the jazz capitals of the world, right, in New Orleans?
Yeah, for older traditional jazz, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean?
The same. Well, it's like we'll play Fats Waller and Jelly Roll Morton and Louis Armstrong and Big Spider Peck and stuff from the 1900s, 19-teens, 1920s, 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But predominantly the music that I play in the scene that I do in New Orleans, we aren't playing the Herbie Hancock, the Miles Davis, the Mulgrew Miller. We aren't doing all the newer bop, hard bop, post bop stuff,
mm-hmm.
or traditional.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean to be playing in New Orleans? I would think that the number of really quality musicians has got to be awfully high. And do you get a chance to interact with them, or how does that work?
It's amazing. There are a lot of really killer players here, and there are some very specialized ones too. I got lucky. I get to work every week with a drummer who has over 100 years of family lineage in the New Orleans music scene.
Mm.
And he also toured with Harry Connick Jr. and Dr. John, and I get to work with him every Friday night.
Wow. Wow. And when I saw you when you were back in Racine a couple months ago, and I hadn't seen you perform in years, but, and I hope you take this as a compliment, your stage presence was probably the biggest thing that I saw where, you know, your music talent and the way you play and things, I've always, you know, respected that and enjoyed it, but I was standing there because George's was extremely crowded that night, so I wasn't sitting there, but just watching you perform, and I thought, man, you look comfortable. Did it feel comfortable?
Yeah. At this point, being on stage is very, very natural. It always wasn't as comfortable as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But I credit that to the past 10 years. I've really developed this calm place where I come from when performing. And I credit that to In New Orleans now, I average about 450 gigs per year.
Wow.
Which is an astronomical number when I look back at each year. But
yeah,
it's very plausible when I'll break the numbers down for you. Like, with the Dukes of Dixieland, we perform roughly 315 to 325 nights a year. So that's a 7 day a week, 11 and a half month a year job.
Wow.
So that's 315. We'll just cap it there. And then I have the Friday Burgundy Burlesque show, the solo piano, and the Fritzels on Bourbon Street every week. So that's three more per week. And if we just say 45 weeks per year that I do those, and, you know, 7 weeks I don't, mm-hmm, generically, that's another 135. So that would put us at 450, 315 and 135.
Wow.
And that doesn't even include other busy times like Mardi Gras. I mean, the last week of February, the first week of March this year was coming up to the close of carnival season and Mardi Gras Day, Fat Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I did 15 gigs in 1 week this year.
Wow. How do you make sure that it stays fun?
I don't have to get up at 6 in the morning and go work in a bank. I did that. I worked at a bank. Well, I wouldn't call it working there. But after I finished the requirements for the finance degree at Parkside, my advisor, Mr. Wright, was a very intelligent guy, very helpful. And he told me, you can go get a job if you want and, use your transcripts. And you don't have the degree yet because you haven't applied for graduation. But got all the training done.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and got a job, and I go through the orientation, and I go to my first day. And I was in a band in Milwaukee at this time, and we were going to do a 6 day trip going and playing a couple other cities. And this was like 3 months out. So I go to my orientation, I go to the first day of the job at the bank, and I tell them, hey, in 3 months, I'm going to need these 6 days off. And they said, oh, no. No.
No.
So you're brand new. We aren't going to give you that time off. It was a peak time for them, I guess, for their business cycle.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, if you aren't going to give me off, I'll put in my 2 weeks. And they said, well, if you're going to put in your 2 weeks on your first day, you can go. I'm like, all right, see you later.
Put in my 2 weeks on the first day.
Well, I'm not going to not play piano.
Right. So and you're playing a lot, you're busy, and do you get a chance to just kind of play for yourself a little bit, and where you get to work on your own music, or are you playing so much that you just kind of it's working those various shows?
It comes and goes. Like with the Dukes, with the 300 plus nights a year that we do, we rehearse once a month on average, and that's when we go over new material, and then you have to work it up on your own.
Okay.
And the other stuff I do, I get to add songs to those anytime I want.
Mm-hmm.
So I still work on my own stuff. For solo piano shows, I get to do anything. So I'm working on a song right now that I heard a friend play a couple years ago that I really liked, but I never took the time to learn it. So I'm learning it now, and it's called Mississippi Mud.
Okay.
Just an old jazz tune that we can do around here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on that right now. So I get to do anything I want. My material particularly sticks to the New Orleans traditional jazz and New Orleans R&B piano player styles.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not working on, when I play solo piano, I get asked to play like Don't Stop Believin' or Brown Eyed Girl and stuff, and that's not what I do.
Well, it was interesting hearing you in Racine, and I can't think of the name of the song that you did, but it had something to do with I Don't Believe About the Diamonds.
Oh yeah, it's a song that my uncle and I wrote together.
Yeah, that was good. I like that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, how did that song come about?
Oh man, that song is on an album that I did about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been playing this burlesque show since 2014, and one of the dancers came backstage to the green room after the show one night and said, man, these old jazz songs that we danced to are really cool. They'd be fun if someone wrote some original music for us to dance to. And I said, okay, give me a minute. So I went home and I wrote 8 songs that I thought were pretty good. They're of various levels of risque content and innuendo and double entendres.
Uh-huh.
That's all the meaning of the lyrics. And I had 8 songs, and I called the dancers over to my house and I played them, and they loved them. So I made a deal with the producer of that show that we would do my originals in the show if I produced the CD.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted 4 songs to fill out that album to have 10 tracks. And I was talking with my uncle, who writes songs. I told him about my project, and he said, well, let me see what I can do. So he wrote some lyrics down and over the phone, and he sang to me his idea, and I sent a recording back to him of what I thought would work for the song, and that's how that one, I Don't Believe, came to be. It's my uncle with the lyrics, and I wrote the music and the melody, and I put it on the Burlesque album.
Wow. Well, I like that one. That was good. And I'm reading through the story that you were working with Derek on, and I did not know that you were a pianist at the Alpine Resort in Door County.
Oh yeah, it was Bell. Belsky. Man, I love that guy.
Yeah. So how did what was that experience like?
It was the best thing that I could have ever hoped for. Tim, after I graduated and I did the Alpine with him a few times, even in Vegas, he took me aside one night and he said, well, I let Tim get away with calling me Joey.
Uh-huh.
Tim takes me aside and he goes, Joey, I got to tell you why I did this game. And I said, okay, tell me, Tim. And he said, you came to my band room that first semester of your freshman year, and I thought, I don't really understand this kid, but I'd like to get to know him. And so I worked on getting to know you, and you're an all right guy. So I invited you to play at the Alpine with me.
Wow.
And I kept doing it. Every year he'd call, I'd say, absolutely. I'd cancel other stuff to go hang out with him for a week up there.
Yeah. Well, I told Derek, I said, I'm pretty sure that that if you would have asked Tim Bell what my name was, I don't believe he would have been able to do that. You know, I'd see him and he, you know, he knew that I was somebody that he worked with at Parkside and that, but the fact that every time I met him, he'd go, hey man, how you doing, man? And I thought, oh yeah. And then we'd talk a little jazz and I felt like, oh, like I'm part of like this jazz thing now because somebody's calling me man.
Yeah, you're in the club, man.
That's right. Yeah, he was fun. So while you're here at Parkside, you know, you led the jazz combo. I had forgotten that you also led the pep band for a little bit at some of the basketball games back in 03-04. What did it mean at that age to be leading a combo?
I had never had that opportunity. And my first year in the jazz combo, Ben Olson was the leader. And he's, you know, a few years older than me and has a whole lot of experience. Well, he had a lot more experience when I came to Parkside than I did. So it was interesting to work with him that first year. And then when Tim asked me to lead it, I was kind of completely green. So Tim would take me in his office and counsel me on things they needed to do and better ways to handle interacting with the other members, because we were all friends.
Mm-hmm.
But with me being the leader, I got to make the decisions or pick the tunes or figure out an arrangement for it and things like that. So it was stuff I hadn't ever been able to do before or had the opportunity to, that Parkside gave me the opportunity to practice that aspect of my craft.
Mm-hmm. And the jazz combo and the pep band are kind of two different things.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know what to do with the pep band. Man, when they called me and they said, yeah, you've been recommended by some of the faculty in the music department to lead the pep band. I was like, what pep band? I'm like, well, that's, you're going to lead it.
You're going to build it and lead it.
Yeah. So I hauled a keyboard into the gym and we had a few horn players and a drummer, and we just went for it. We were playing all sorts of stuff, jazz tunes, pop tunes, R&B, Stevie Wonder, whatever. We'd find an arrangement online or I'd make one up and hand it out to the guys.
Wow, wow. So when you get a chance to come back to Racine and play a little bit, how does that feel?
Oh, it feels great, especially being able to do it at George's, because George's gave me my first solo piano gig when I was, I think, 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I would play I was 18, because my parents didn't have to show up for the Friday happy hours from 4 to 6 p.m. And, the Racine Kenosha music community has always been so kind to me that anytime I come home, I always make sure to at least set up one gig to, you know, play for the people and hang out with my friends and see the people that supported me, you know, at this point, 19, 20 years ago. I mean, I've been seeing guys in that area since I was 15.
Right.
And they've been kind enough to nurture me, and then I get to see other people that have come up since me that these same guys have given back to and helped foster a musical appreciation for in lots of other people.
Yeah, and as I said before, the fact that I had to stand at George's shows that people appreciate your music and enjoy coming out to hear you play. Where's Big Joe Kennedy going to be? Oh, 2 or 3 years from now, does he know?
Nope, that's the beauty of it.
Any thoughts on what you might like to do, or just kind of going along and enjoying things?
I'm not complacent and I'm not content, but I am happy. Mm. And I think that's important for me to separate. I want more. I want to do more things. I want to do other things musically. But I'm not willing to run away from everything that I've been building and doing the last 5 or 6 years in order to do something else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I lived in New Orleans from 2009 to 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was on cruise ships, it didn't make sense for me to be gone 10 months a year and still pay, you know, rent and utilities and all that stuff. So my wife and I moved back to the Racine area because mm-hmm. I had my family and a support system up there. But then I got the job offer in 2013 to move back to New Orleans and start playing full time with the Dukes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the past 6 years of being down here, if you would have asked me in 2011 when I left New Orleans if I'd be back, you know, 19 months later, I would have probably said no.
Yeah.
And I was back there less than 2 years later.
Wow. Wow. What's the best thing about New Orleans?
Well, I have a biased opinion because I really like the music. But I think the music and the culture are the best things.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to say the food, and that's great. But I've got dietary restrictions where I can't eat a bunch of the stuff. So I don't worry about the food.
Okay.
It's the music and the culture.
Music and the culture. So I and Derek's heard me say this many times that when the show goes by really fast and I look at the clock and the 30 minutes are up, I know it's been a great show because it went by quickly. But I got to ask you one last question, and then we're going to let you go, and that is, how long did it take to get your dog to sing on video on Facebook?
Oh, man. So my wife and I had a German Shepherd for 10 years, and he would howl and sing with me playing piano, and then he would take a nap under the piano while I practiced.
Yeah.
And after he passed, we got the dog that we've got now. And when I when he was very little, I mean, he's only 17, 18 months right now.
Uh-huh.
But when he was real little, he wouldn't necessarily vocalize when I played piano, but he would come into the room.
Oh.
And it took probably about, you know, 7, 8 months of him just kind of coming in and not doing anything before he started to bark with it. And then it was just the past 3 months where he really started to belt out the full tunes like I caught the video of.
Excellent, excellent. Well, so I'll say that I'll put a plug in for Big Joe Kennedy on Facebook, because the dog singing along is that's worth going to Facebook to check that out.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good. Joe, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. Appreciate that. Good luck with your music career, and congratulations on where your career has taken you so far. Today on Parkside Today, we've been joined by Joe Kennedy, a.k.a. Big Joe Kennedy from New Orleans, Parkside grad in 2007, who's been doing really well, and continued success, Joe.
Thank you very much, John. Pleasure talking with you.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.